Happy Bitcoin Monday, freaks. It's your boy Odell here for another Citadel Dispatch. The audience-funded show focused on actionable discussion only. Citadel Dispatch has no ads or sponsors. It is funded by you guys. It's funded by our audience. I appreciate all you who continue to support the show. I could not do it without you. The easiest way to support the show is through podcasting 2.0 apps like Breeze, Fountain, Podverse.fm. You simply load the app up with sats, search Citadel Dispatch, press the subscribe button, pick how many sats you think the show is worth per minute, and then as you listen, it will automatically send sats to my node. Podcasting 2.0 also has a boostergram feature. A boostergram is a flat payment that you send, one lump sum payment, and it can include a message. You can think of it kind of like a global comment section. And the top boostergrams from the previous episode are read at the beginning of every episode. You can also support the show by going to CitadelDispatch.com. I have a BTC Pay server there. You can support through on-chain Bitcoin or Lightning Bitcoin through that BTC Pay server. I also have a Paynim, which uses BIP47, supported by Samurai Wallet and Sparrow Wallet. My Paynim is Odell, very easy to remember, so you can send support that way. I do thank all the freaks who continue to support the show. Like I said, I could not do it without you. And now I understand that it is a bear market. If you cannot support the show via sats, it's completely respectable. You can also support the show by subscribing, leaving a review on your favorite platform, whether that's Twitch, YouTube, or your favorite podcast app. Citadel Dispatch is available in all podcast apps. Consider sharing it with your friends and family. That really does go a long way, and I appreciate all of you who do that. As always, on Citadel Dispatch, we will have our live chat going. You can participate in the live chat on YouTube, Twitch, or on our Matrix chat. All those links are at CitadelDispatch.com. That is, if you click that citadel.chat link, obviously the Twitch link is if you click Twitch, and YouTube is if you click YouTube. So before we get started, I'm just going to read some of the top boostergrams from the previous few shows. We had user, lots of numbers attached to the user, sent 60,000 sats. He said, "You had me dying when you had to clarify that douchebag was a username, LOL. Then we had Riku Maru saying with 12,000 sats saying, "Thanks for not shying away from the hard topics, Matt. I'm a fan of Samurai, and I think the conclusion of the show should be please add a warning screen on mobile app a la Sparrow in order to help onboarding education." We have Blockchain Boog with 5,000 sats saying, "Great convo. I would give it to Zelko." And then I'm also going to go and read some from our most recent Bitcoin.review episode. We have PTAR with 100,000 sats saying, "Here's $20 to buy a burrito in Ramallah. Cheers." And then we have C.A. Danner, Ride or Die Freak, with 7,500 sats saying, "Love the good natured debate and good humor from your Satoshi white paper artist freak, C.A. Danner." We have C.A. Danner's art up at Bitcoin Park. I really do appreciate you, C.A. And then we have Nomad Joe, last but not least, with 2,222 sats saying, "Thanks for the research info." Anyway, you can read all the boostergrams in your favorite podcasting 2.0 app. They're all public. I will continue to read them in the future. I do appreciate all the support once again. So with all that said, we have a very interesting guest and topic lined up for today. You may have heard me talk about their project in the past. That project is silent.link. It is a website where you can pay with Bitcoin without any KYC info and get a mobile phone eSIM. If you remember those SIM cards that we use to enable a mobile phone, now they have digital versions that you can download right to your phone. You can buy one of these at silent.link. And we have, I believe, the founder of silent.link or one of the lead maintainers on the show today. How's it going, silent.link?
Good. Happy Bitcoin Monday, freaks. Happy to be here with you today. Some hard questions.
It's a pleasure to finally have you, my dude. I know you you listen to Dispatch regularly, and I've been trying to get you on the show for a while now.
Of course.
So, I mean, let's just, we're both planning on keeping this conversation tight, right to the point. As always, freaks, if you have any questions or comments, just throw them in the live chat and we will get to them. Let's start with, just a basic rundown of the offering of Silent Link. What does Silent Link offer people?
We offer buying anonymous SIMs. It seems that are completely decoupled from your official identity. We do not require anything. We do not require even an email address. You just pay Bitcoin and get an eSIM that can have or a number or be just data only eSIM.
Right. So you can, there's two offerings. There's one where it's just internet data only. You don't have a phone number attached to it. And then there's one that's more expensive that you have a phone number attached to it. I guess, so obviously we've talked on Dispatch a lot about mobile phone privacy, and a lot of that starts, which carrier you choose and how you get that SIM card. Throughout the developed world, it's becoming harder and harder to get a SIM card that's not immediately attached to your identity. If you sign up for something like one of the big majors in America, like an AT&T or a Verizon, they like basically ask for everything short of the blood of your firstborn child. They're asking for your name, your email, your mailing address, maybe a driver's license number, credit card information. All this stuff is obviously completely tied to your identity. A lot of us have gone out of our way to go and get SIM cards with cash and buy them with cash. But even a lot of those prepaid SIM cards now, once you get them, you have to go and activate on their website, and they require all this additional information. Maybe they block VPN usage while you're doing the sign-up process. It's a really difficult process to get a SIM card that isn't directly tied to your legal identity. Now, how are you able to offer us the ability to buy these eSIMs without giving you any personal information when all of these other companies aren't able to do that?
That's because we're a little bit deeper than the front end of the major operators that actually have this task of identifying their customers, mostly because they're related to advertising, I guess. But for surveillance, of course, too. When you deal with say bulk offerings, when you buy numbers, when you buy channels, when you buy SIM profiles, there is actually no requirement to provide KYC information. With the exception of phone numbers. Phone numbers were difficult for us to source without KYC requirements. But we managed to get United States phone numbers and United Kingdom phone numbers for some limited time. We were offering Dutch phone numbers, but at the moment we are out of the stock, and we are still looking for a way to source non-KYC numbers to offer you.
So from your perspective, when you're operating this business, it's easier for you to get that data only SIM than it is for you to actually get provisioned phone numbers.
Yes, of course. Not only get them, also to sell them, because they work much better.
Well, obviously, the internet only data plans are useful for people. You're able to, you know, then use them with different VoIP applications and stuff like that. But a lot of the advantage is lost when you don't have the phone number. So many different services require phone numbers that are basically used as these identifiers. So the fact that we can get phone numbers through Silent Link is probably substantially, you know, bigger of a deal for users than the data only.
Yes, but as a responsible vendor, we always warn our customers that when they get this these numbers, they're dealing with outdated technology, and they always in the risk of identifying themselves, like, for example, using these capabilities of voice and text by actually talking and receiving messages from other people, and all this is logged and voice fingerprinted, and actually doesn't make much sense to buy one of our identity plans and then start talking on the phone like in the good old days.
Right. So this is why on your website you suggest people, if they get a phone number, they attach it to something like Signal or attach it to something like WhatsApp, and then use the VoIP capabilities of that app rather than actually use the native call functionality. But also your plans don't include outbound calls. Users cannot make outbound calls. What's the reasoning for that?
There are several very strong reasons for that. First and foremost is that once we offer outbound call and text capability, we have to deal with enormous volumes of abuse and spam. It's not really feasible for us. Second, it doesn't make much sense in terms of providing an anonymous service because, as I have already mentioned, subscribers get immediately voice fingerprinted on their calls. So it simply doesn't work that way. These are main reasons. And another more technical reason is it's a little bit easier to source phone numbers with inbound voice capability, without outbound voice capability, with no KYC information.
Right. So a lot of it is just how, you know, what you have available to you.
Yes. Yes. And what we can further like sustain as a service, because if we become a place that where most of the spam is originated, we finally just will be shut down. That's all.
Right. That makes sense. So, I mean, we have Communer in the Matrix chat wants everyone to know that the Matrix chat is the best chat. I just want all the freaks, if you're a new freak, just to be aware that that Matrix chat goes 24/7, 365. So even when we're not broadcasting live on Dispatch, we have a lot of great discussion over there, and you should consider joining even if you're participating through YouTube or Twitch. So what's the reasoning? So outbound calls are not allowed. Outbound texts are not allowed. But inbound calls and texts are allowed. Is that just to give users options? Like, why not disable both of those too, if part of it is privacy reasons?
Because inbound calls and inbound text is what you need to register accounts.
Oh, of course. Right. Like, I'm signing up on Signal, it's going to send me a confirmation text. Or I'm signing up on Twitter, it's going to send me a confirmation text with the code, and I'm going to need that.
That's why it's called identity.
Right.
And then if you ever need to call public switch telephone network, i.e. regular phone numbers, we suggest that you sign up for some VoIP service of your own choice. We will not ever offer this service because we do not mix the risks in one place.
Right.
You sign up. Preferably, it should be anonymous and paid with Bitcoin, and use that to call a public telephone network.
Right. That makes sense to me. So you answered this question on Twitter that someone had. Horizon Compass had this question. Does Silent Link use roaming all the time? And what is the advantage of using a foreign identity account, aka using a UK number in the US versus a US number in the US? Do you want to go into that a little bit? Let's start with Why does Silent Link use roaming all the time?
It's actually an old trick. VIP persons were using roaming SIM cards for as long as SIM cards exist. It's actually much more difficult to surveil a SIM card that's not issued by a local operator that came from some other country. It's very trivial to for local law enforcement or someone that can have some connections in the local operator to do whatever they want with your SIM card. If it's issued by some foreign telecom, it's much, much harder.
So if I'm using the US identity on Silent Link and I'm getting a US number, that's a US number provided by a non-US based telco? Or is that
Actually, yes. We source numbers separately from where we source SIM profiles and where we get the roaming service. These are all different entities, different operators. And we make sure that this is all interoperable.
So if I'm using a U.S. identity, we got a U.S. phone number through Silent Link, and I'm using it in the States, I'm basically roaming on T-Mobile or something like that. But T-Mobile hasn't provided me the SIM. The SIM is a different telco. And as a result, T-Mobile has less ability to basically pull files on me. Did I get that correct?
Yes. First, they do not know your identity.
Right.
Second, they do not ever know your phone number. Because when a foreign SIM is roaming in the carrier network, the carrier does not know its phone number. They operate the internal ID. It's called IMSI.
Right. And that's different than the IMEI.
Yeah, IMEI is a hardware identifier.
Got it. And IMSI is the SIM identifier?
Yes, exactly.
So BTC Pins asked, if he uses an eSIM on his phone that also has a SIM in it, like a physical SIM that's attached to his identity, the two can be linked, correct?
Theoretically, yes, but in practice, they will have different IMEIs because the SIM part of the phone has one IMEI and the EUICC, this is the eSIM part of the phone, has a different IMEI for the phones that I know.
So it's not actually horrible. It's better to use a fresh phone, but it's not horrible.
Yes, of course, the manufacturer knows the link between those identifiers, but for the carrier, it's not trivial.
Got it. Can the carrier that I'm roaming on tell that I bought my SIM on Silent Link?
Yes, it's possible because most of our eSIMs come from one roaming partner. So most of them appear as if you are a visitor from Poland or Israel.
Got it.
But we will be offering more eSIMs from different vendors as well.
Love that. And BTC Pins made an interesting point about the previous SIM, physical SIM versus eSIM. Google would have a database of both of those identifiers. So presumably if it's a Pixel, so presumably the manufacturer could link the two, right? If it's like an iPhone or a Pixel or something.
Sure. Manufacturer can do that. Buy a new phone.
Right. It's always better to buy a new phone Fresh phone.
Sure.
Yes. Okay, that makes sense to me. One of the main questions that I've always had is obviously if I'm using silent.link, when we talk about phone privacy, there's two main trust factors that in my head, and one is if you're using plain text, just regular SMS messages. Obviously, those are like postcards; they're not encrypted. The carrier can read them. And the other is, you know, regular phone calls. But let's say you're not doing either of those, so they're going through an app or whatever that's encrypted, like Signal or Matrix or something like that. The secondary trust factor is that there is an ability to triangulate your location using near cell towers. So they take three cell towers and they're able to track your location based on those three cell towers. Is SilentLink, are you able to, if you were coerced, if you were forced to, or if you wanted to do this, are we putting trust in you not to triangulate our location? Is that possible for you?
Actually, we have no information at all. We are kind of retailers. So the only information that we have is the date and time of purchase. That's all. So if one of our users is targeted, then what actually happens is this. The authorities might follow the number. They will come to the number pool operator. From there, they will go to a roaming provider. From there, they will eventually get to a local carrier. And only the local carrier has the location information.
Got it. So they have to go through all those hoops before they could actually figure out what towers it attached to. They couldn't just go, if I was roaming on T-Mobile, they couldn't just go to T-Mobile and be like, "What? Where the location is?"
If they know that you were located in some spot, then of course they do not need to go all the way. They just can continue locating you based on your previous location information.
Right. They take that device and then they just track that device. Or...
Yes. They already know your IMEI and they can follow it.
Got it. What would you, and I think this is kind of connected to the last question. It's really hard for in America, it's gotten increasingly difficult to get a phone number without attaching it to your identity. You seem to allude that a lot of it is based on corporate the need for corporations desiring to sell our marketing data, but it seems like there's also a major regulatory push to force KYC information when you buy a phone number. So as a result, when someone sees a service like this that seems almost too good to be true, like I can just literally just go to the website, pay with Bitcoin, press the download button, and then my compatible phone that's compatible with eSIMs literally just all of a sudden has cell reception and a phone number, and I can top it up with Bitcoin without providing an email or anything. The first thought is this must be, you know, an intentional honeypot. This must be a spook. This must be someone who's trying to de-anonymize people that want privacy, or Bitcoiners specifically. What do you say to people that have that concern?
Well, if someone doesn't ask you for your identity, it doesn't make him a spook.
And that's a very...
We're just a way not to provide this information. That's it.
So why do you think there aren't other... Why are you the only ones? Like, why are you the only ones? Like, are there other services that I can use out there that I can just pay with Bitcoin and just not give up any information and get an eSIM? Why do you think?
None that we know of. None that we know of. I guess that's not because it's inherently impossible to provide the service, as I have said already. It's because people that are in telecom do not trust Bitcoin as a means of payment yet.
So there are services. So most of these types of services, they just choose credit cards because that's what people are comfortable with. That's what you think.
People are comfortable with doing what they are used to be doing for some time.
Right. I mean, so let's jump into the product offering a little bit. But first of all, I just want to thank you again for joining us. This is a product that I've used. I find very useful. I've talked about it on Dispatch many times. It is the ideal type of product that you'd like to see come out of Bitcoin as a payments technology, like the ability that I can essentially shop from you as a provider from around the world without giving you my private information and get a service that I really need that I can't find somewhere else. And it's also very useful for travel. Like I know a lot of people that use it specifically when they come to America, because it's hard to get a data plan in America as an international. So first the user pays $60 a year reoccurring fee for the identity plan. We'll focus on the identity plan. They get the US number, and they have a $5 initial balance. And then they get a page. They basically get like an account page that they have to save. And that account page is where they basically have to top it up to pay for their data usage and their text usage if they're using text messages on a per usage basis. How do you come up with the pricing is all listed at silent.link/rates. How are these prices determined?
They are mostly determined by the roaming operator. We are offering the same prices.
And presumably you're adding a silent link fee on top so you can make money, right?
You have a certain discount.
Right. So actually the roaming provider, like, so you're getting the SIM from, like you said, like a Polish provider or an Israeli provider, and then they have a contract with like T-Mobile in the United States to pay a certain rate. And then they pass that on to you and then you charge the customer.
Yes.
Awesome. Freaks, if you have any additional questions while we have silent.link here, please throw them in the chat. This has been an extremely productive conversation so far. I mean, we're only a half an hour in and I just feel like we've nailed pretty much everything. Is there something specifically that you'd like to talk about?
Merchant adoption, maybe. I would like to invite all merchants to join us with providing services to the Bitcoin community because it's a great pleasure.
Just merchants in general of all different types?
Yes, yes, yes. It's a very eye-opening experience.
Do you think we're trending in the right direction? Are you disappointed with how few Bitcoin merchants are, or is it the opposite that you're impressed?
No, it's the opposite. We are impressed. It's a great pleasure, as I said.
I feel like it's been growing relatively quickly, at least recently, the last like 2 years or so. And specifically, I mean, what's really rare is seeing Bitcoin only merchants like yourself, where you don't even. You don't even accept credit cards. There's no fiat. It's just Bitcoin only.
Yeah, we have some pressure from the Monero community, who we respect. That we have Monero as a native means of payment, but We have no such plans at the moment because BTC Pay Server is and management of the Lightning node is enough headache for us at the moment.
So right now, I mean, you have a link on your website. You essentially like tell people to use one of the swap services if they want to pay with Monero, right?
Yes, that should work for everybody, and we do not have to deal with another asset. Unfortunately, some people are always nagging us with that we do not want to trust some third party. We try to explain that it doesn't make any sense. Actually, you do not need to trust fixed float to do the payment.
Well, there's custodial risk, temporary custodial risk when they send it if fixed float doesn't send the payment on. But it's like they're trusting them with like $60, whatever.
And for several seconds.
Yeah, exactly. So do you think that's interesting? I mean, for a long time, like, I mean, I personally think BTC Pay Server is one of the most important projects in our space. Just because it makes it so easy for merchants to accept Bitcoin natively and sovereignly. And it seems like you would agree with that.
Of course. Actually, your words is what made us make the service.
Who did?
You saying that it's one of the most important projects in the Bitcoin space.
Oh, that means a lot. Glad to hear
you
that.
You directed our attention to this. To BTC Pay Server, and then after we saw it, we wanted to use it.
Because I love that.
Owning a payment system.
It's pretty powerful.
Yeah.
So it looks like we have more questions from the freaks now. Appreciate all you freaks who give us questions. Couldn't do without you. We have Carlos in the comments saying, have you ever had any issues with the providers that connect some mobile network operators, i.e. Cineverse?
No.
Do you know what Cineverse is?
No.
Neither do I.
Never.
Carlos, if you want to give us more context in the comments, let us know. I don't know what Cineverse is. We also have Dread, Ride or Die Freak Dread, in the Matrix chat asking, any thoughts around streaming Lightning as a payment for data SMS?
I would like to see Lightning used for everything. It's great technology.
I mean, that seems like way more complicated to implement than just topping up on the website.
Yes.
But it's a cool concept. He's also asking, is there any kind of VPN proxy bridge functionality built into the eSIM for places like China?
A great question. Actually, our eSIMs are very useful in China and in United Arab Emirates because they completely circumvent the state firewalls.
Well, because they're roaming?
Yes, because the data goes to Poland or Israel, and it goes to the internet from there. So
that's
no great China firewall. Unfortunately, Chinese Communist Party goes to great lengths to forbid any eSIM compatible phones from China. So you cannot buy an eSIM compatible phone in China. You can only bring it from abroad.
I see. So the phones aren't even sold there. You have to get the physical phone. You have to get abroad.
Yes. The iPhones and the Pixels. I don't know if they have Pixels, but they have iPhones definitely. And the iPhones that are sold in China do not have eSIM capability at all.
Oh, so like the new iPhone, the iPhone 14 that they made a whole big deal about being eSIM only. The one that's sold in China is going to have no eSIM compatibility whatsoever.
I wonder what they're going to do. But all the previous models that were sold in China mainland had no eSIM capability whatsoever.
That's interesting. I mean, my understanding, just for a little bit of context, with the iPhone 14 is Europe is forcing them to have a SIM card slot. So the European version of the iPhone 14 will have a SIM card slot and eSIM support. And then the US version will not have a SIM card slot, will only do eSIM. And now my assumption here is the Chinese one will be SIM only. And they just have three different SKUs for the different
two SIM cards.
Oh yeah, they could do two SIM cards. And funny story with that, when they don't have the SIM functionality, physical SIM card functionality in the US. So someone opened it up and it's just got a, it's got like a plastic block in the place where the SIM card would be because they didn't want to make it, you know, a different phone model and they didn't want it to bend when they click it. So they had the space for it. They just chose not to do it. Carlos says Cineverse is used to facilitate establishment of data sessions for roaming subscribers, also used for text and maybe multimedia messages. Well, it sounds like you've had no issues there. Have you had any issues with someone buying a number or something and then it getting cut off mid-year, like while they're in their plan?
No, never.
And I guess that's just because you pick your partners wisely. That's got to be the hardest part of your business, right? Is the actual providers.
Yes, of course. We tried different vendors and some were more reliable in terms of message reception and call reception, and we are offering the best.
That's awesome. Well, I wish you guys the best of luck. I really do appreciate your service. I appreciate everything you do. Just go back to that merchant adoption tangent we were talking about. What is the single biggest thing that will help boost merchant adoption?
You do not have to hire an accountant.
Why do you not have to hire an accountant?
Because you do not have to.
Fair enough.
Well, literally.
I mean, it's pretty cool that you can just offer your business globally, just accept Bitcoin, not deal with banks or anything. Well, freaks, if you don't have any more questions, I'm going to wrap this thing up because this has been probably the highest signal 40 minutes I've ever done on Dispatch. And I have no more questions for this gentleman. We'll give you like a little bit more time if you have any last minute questions. Let me see if Twitter has mentioned anything. Don't see any Twitter questions.
If I have more time.
You have plenty of time. I'm here for you. What do you want to talk about?
I would like to encourage our subscribers to use VPN. I would like them to understand the difference between VPN services and self-hosted VPNs. Some are better for one things and some are better for other things. I would like to encourage them to study Tor network and Hunix. Great project.
What was the second project?
Hunix. Hunix is the proper way to use Tor.
Right. On your VPN comment, this is a topic that I talk about a lot. You want to go into when you should be using like a hosted VPN, like Mulvad versus using your own self-hosted VPN on some kind of virtual private server somewhere?
Well, it's obviously if you use something like Mulvad, you kind of supposedly have an anonymity set of other users, whereas if you use your own VPN, then your IP address connects all your activity. But I guess for maybe not majority, but the large portion of people, it really makes sense to study the self-hosted VPN option.
Well, so I mean, when I look at the trade-off, when you're using a hosted VPN, you're trusting the hosted VPN provider. So if you're using Mulvad says, you know, we don't take any logs. We're not tracking your internet traffic. But there's no way for anyone to prove it. It's a trust relationship. Now, Molvad is similar to your offering in that it doesn't even ask for an email address. You literally just get an account number. You pay with Bitcoin, you get an account number. So they don't specifically know who you are, but they obviously know your IP addresses, stuff like that, when you connect to the network. And you are trusting them with your internet traffic. But the benefit there is if you go to some website, let's say you go to google.com, your IP address shows up as every other Molvad user that uses that. So you have the anonymity set of the crowd there. Now, if you use a self-hosted VPN, you don't have to trust a hosted VPN provider because you're running it yourself. But if you go to Google and then you go to Facebook and then you go to Amazon or something, that same IP address will be linked across all three of those sites. So they have different benefits and negatives, and you kind of have to weigh them depending on what you're trying to achieve and what your threat model is. Do you think that was well put?
Yes, absolutely. Exactly like that. But now it's quite easy to host the VPS without providing your identity as well.
Do you have any recommended services for that?
Luna, for example.
Luna requires a phone number. Oh, but you could just use your Silent Link phone number.
Exactly.
Fair enough. We have, obviously you just told everyone they should look into VPNs and run a VPN when they're running Silent Link, but BTC Pins asked, is there much benefit to doing that? So why do you tell people that they should do that?
Using a VPN, because we actually do not want even our roaming partner to be able to snoop into the data traffic. And maybe having a Polish or Israeli IP address is not the best option in all the cases. So we would like to point our users to the fact that they are absolutely free to have control over the IP address by using VPNs.
Yeah, I just like the constant push by you, and even all the literature on the website is what I've talked about a lot, which is this idea that, you know, if you're running any business, like really you should want the least amount of information on your customers as possible. You don't want that liability. You don't want to know what they're doing, because then all of a sudden, like, you could hand over that data. You could be forced to hand over that data. That data could leak. And I really just appreciate how it's just constant. It's constant with you that you just don't want, you want as little information on your users as possible.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Thank you for pointing that.
Awesome. Do you have any additional thoughts before we wrap?
A big shout out to Spectre Wallet team and Stepan Snigirov in particular. If they're great products, then I don't know how we would operate our business, because actually we believe only in do-it-yourself hardware wallets.
Oh, so you actually use their Spectre DIY hardware wallet?
Several of them. And we're constantly buying more for our partners, for our friends, for our relatives.
That's awesome. Yeah, no, I love that team. They also have a great software wallet on desktop. Them and Sparrow are my two favorite desktop wallets. Fully open source. You can use it with your own node very easily. Have you ever checked out the Seed Signer project? It's very similar to their DIY product, but it's cheaper.
We appreciate the effort, but comparing the Seed Signer to the Spectre Wallet is how you do the same product in the wrong way.
Well, I like the spiciness. Why?
Because the main things about Spectre Wallet are it has a big screen, so it lets you easily input your seed words, and you actually can use it stateless. And only by using it stateless, it gives you the ultimate freedom and ultimate security. But since then, unfortunately, you are tied to your hardware device. You cannot easily import your seed words.
Are you aware of their seed QR format?
You have to store this QR somewhere.
Yeah, I'm aware.
It's like a never-ending riddle. You solve this part, you have this part, and it never ends.
That's very fair critique. Definitely a much smaller screen. It's harder to input seeds in. Do you ever use the smart card feature on the Spectre DIY?
Not us, but some of our partners do.
It's kind of cool that you have that as an option. Yeah.
Yeah, for some use cases, it's great. Great.
Well, anyway,
like the board does not have any communication capability at all.
Right.
And it cannot even multitask.
Right.
It's a very stupid device. And you can audit all the code, it's all in Python. Very useful.
Awesome. Well, I will echo the sentiment. I definitely appreciate the team over at Spectre, Stepan. They're fucking legends. I appreciate you. Thank you for coming on the show. Thank you for your product. Your project is awesome. I love it. I hope you continue to listen to Dispatch. And if I have any more feedback, whatnot, I will not hesitate to reach out to you. And I hope you'd be willing to do the same. If you need anything from me, just consider me at your service in terms of feedback or anything else.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, sir. To all the freaks, reminder, that's silent.link. Very easy to use. I hope you all found this helpful. If you have any more questions for silent.link, hit us in our Matrix chat. If you go to citadeldispatch.com, it's right there, citadel.chat. Or send a boostergram with your comments, and I can relay them over to silent.link. He's also very active on Twitter. His Twitter handle is at silentlink1 on Twitter, so you can hit him up directly. And that's all. I appreciate you all. Stay humble, stack sats. Cheers.
Bye.